This podcast is supported by Understood Explains. As parents, we are often having to figure out things as we go, and that is very true for our children's education. And to help you out, I want to tell you about a podcast called Understood Explains. This season is hosted by teacher and special education expert Uliana Ortube, and she discusses all the things you'd want to know about individual education plans, or IEPs, what they are, why they're needed, who benefits from them, and what to expect when you have meetings with teachers. I could have really used this podcast when my son had an IEP for speech when he was six. I was overwhelmed trying to understand the process and what everything meant. The episode on Understood Explains, Does My Child Need an IEP, was the kind of info that would have really helped me get the most out of the educational support of the IEP for my son. And if you need that kind of support, I really recommend this podcast. To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm perinatal psychologist and host Dr. Kat. There's more to the story than just postpartum depression, and this podcast aims to share it all. From personal stories and lived experience to experts who break down the ups and downs of life from getting pregnant, pregnancy, perinatal loss, and postpartum adjustment to parenthood. While this is not psychotherapy or medical advice, it is all of the stuff you ever wanted to know about mental health and new parenthood. Welcome to Mom in Mind. I'm your host, Dr. Kat. On our episode today, we are talking with Allison Steger. She is a therapist, and she's going to be sharing her story through pregnancy and postpartum, where she experienced what she calls the sampler platter of issues, especially because what she was going through didn't necessarily fit into the description of postpartum depression. She experienced other things like postpartum rage and anxiety and birth trauma, as well as dealing with some body image changes. She describes her experience as just feeling like a bad parent. She just didn't know what was going on. And to a lot of people, it looked like she was doing just fine, but on the inside, it was a different story. She's now done her own healing and has started to help and support other people going through perinatal mental health conditions. Allison is a licensed clinical social worker certified in perinatal mental health. She owns Highwire Therapy, a solo private practice serving clients in Illinois and Louisiana, specializing in reproductive mental health through a feminist lens. She also runs The Matriarchy, a coaching practice that helps feminist mothers use rebellious anger and fierce care to lead their families and small businesses with pleasure, purpose, and personality. She shares a little bit more with us about her view of American motherhood and why we need a new culture of care. So let's hear from Allison. Welcome, Allison. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Always excited to hear from other therapists who've had lived experience and have gone on to shape their career and support other families. So, each of our stories has some overlap, but they're also very unique and different. And since the listeners for the show are a mix of therapists and also people who are going through who are like not necessarily therapy professionals, right, it really kind of does, it works for both types of listeners. Those of us who are still supporting other families and those of us who need to know that we exist, people yes. who have gone through it as well. So wherever you're comfortable, please share your story.
Sure. So I got pregnant unexpectedly, when I was almost 30. And I was in a supportive but new relationship and just decided that it was the right thing. And I felt like it was going to be okay and went forward with it. And I think it's interesting looking back on that time because I know I very much projected this outward sense of moving along through it, feeling calm, feeling good, like just take it like it go. And you know, I got some comments on how calm I seemed about it. But really looking back, I can notice a lot of that as just a disconnect, a feeling of sort of numbness, not in the sense of not being excited or not wanting the baby, but the overwhelm of what was about to happen, just sort of. And that really transitioned also into my birth experience, which I will talk about in a second. But I think it's also important to note just that at that time, I had had a history of quite a bit of trauma in my adult years, and physical trauma. And so that sense of like disconnection and numbness was really in line. And I had done at that point a lot of therapy, a lot of work. I was in a good place, but I was also actively in the middle of an eating disorder as well when I got pregnant. So I had all these sort of little things going on, and thankfully that was a reason for me to really pull back on a lot of my eating disorder habits, and created a lot of space for healing, just by the fact of I don't want to do this while I'm pregnant. Mm. But all that just to say that there was a lot of like, not active distress, but a lot of things happening. And then just combined with, you know, my 30 years up to that point, mm-hmm. and, you know, life. So it kind of lent itself to this like a feeling of disorientation. Like, this is the thing that I chose and I'm happy to do it, but also what's going on and where am I in this? So when I went into labor, my water broke, I went to the hospital once I realized what had happened, and they told me that, you know, they want to have the baby out within 24 hours, because otherwise it could get an infection of the fluid or something. And I was right at my due date. I was just a few days early. Mm-hmm. So again, it was sort of this like, oh, okay. Like I kind of just thought that I would start going, you know, having contractions, and I would hang out at home, and like, then we'd go to the hospital. And I hadn't really considered another option. And again, that sense of like, it'll probably just work out. It'll be fine. And so when that's not what happened, it really strengthened that feeling of like, I need to check out. I'm completely overwhelmed here. Mm-hmm. And I remember feeling just very much like helpless inside of my body. Like, this is happening. They started me on Pitocin in order to induce labor. And that was miserable. You know, it went from 0 to 100 in like 5 minutes. And because of that feeling of disconnection with myself and my body, it was really hard to be able to like lean into the pain and just sort of be with it. And it was also really difficult once I chose for an epidural, because of the sense of numbness was really jarring as well. Like, nothing felt right.
Yeah.
So a lot of medical interventions that happened, a lot of just furthering that sense of like, I am not in charge of my body. I can't do this. I'm not strong enough. What was I thinking? Eventually leading to an emergency C-section, because I was actually getting an infection of the amniotic fluid. And so that actually felt sort of like a relief when that was on the table, because I had, you know, been trying to push the baby out, and she just was coming up and then popping back. It's just not getting anywhere. It was really hard. But, you know, it's a major surgery. It was a lot, very fast. And, you know, you're in this haze state. And so it's, again, just like something, okay, this is just happening. Like, they're just taking the baby out now. And it was that experience that I think so many people probably listening to this podcast know so well, of like, all right, well, the baby's out and she's healthy and you're fine. Like, we're just going to give you antibiotics and it's good. So cool. Mm-hmm. You know, carry on.
Right.
And, you know, that's just not it. And I think still at that point, you know, I was in that space of like, okay, yeah, sure. Like, let's just move along. It's fine. What the hell just happened? But also I can't think about that too much. And so immediately kind of went into this place of like overfunctioning, and let me prove like that, how much I have this. And I remember being on the operating table and one of the doctors making some comment about like, oh, your body, like you exercise a lot. So like, you're going to just bounce right back and you're going to be fine and you're going to look great. And like that stuck in my head, like, okay, I have to like prove that, you know?
Yeah.
So just immediately was like, okay, I'm not going to lay around in bed all day. I'm going to get up. I'm going to cook. I'm going to clean. I'm going to take care of this baby and I'll be fine. Like, it's not a big deal. I don't need any help. That's bullshit. Mm-hmm. But that was the way that I knew to feel okay and to stay in control of things. Right. And just really having to like prove how much I have this. Now, in the meantime, you know, this is what I was projecting and how I was kind of getting through my days. But underneath, there was just this sense of total panic, which didn't manifest itself as what I would say is like traditional postpartum depression or even anxiety, which was interesting because I'm a very anxious person and I for sure thought that was going to come out. Mm-hmm. And it was more like this, again, this like complete dysregulation. Like I'd get completely overwhelmed. I'd be like screaming into my pillow. I'd be like feeling so angry towards my daughter. Like, why aren't you breastfeeding the right way? Or why are you still crying? Why won't you go to sleep? Mm-hmm. And then of course, just feeling like so awful that I could even be thinking about that mm-hmm. to this baby. Like I recognize that she's a baby, but also I feel totally in distress here and couldn't quite explain what was wrong because it didn't seem like there was enough quote wrong mm-hmm. with me to ask for some sort of help or to tell someone how I was feeling. It just felt like if I was feeling bad, it was because I couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You said, you know, that feeling of overfunctioning, like you needed mm-hmm. to do everything on your own. Mm-hmm. Was there help available and you didn't want the help or like you didn't have the help, so you had to do everything on your own?
A little bit of both. So my partner is, he travels for work pretty extensively and always has. So he was gone about half the time. Mm. And there was a part of me that felt very much like, yeah, go ahead, go back to your job and just go do this because I can handle it. Because there was an association of it, the more I can handle, the more valuable I am as a mother and as a human. Mm-hmm. So it's not that there wasn't help and I was very fortunate in that way. It was that I did not feel like I had permission to actually take it. Like people would offer it, but there was that sense of like, but they don't really want to do this and I uh-huh. could handle it. So I shouldn't bother them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. But yes, a lot of the time I was physically alone and in charge of kind of handling everything day to day. So that's how it was for a very long time and just continuing to feel really adrift and like, okay, today's the day I'm going to get it together and I'm not going to get frustrated and I'm not going to, you know, scream in the bathroom shower, like bang on my steering wheel when my child, you know, is screaming in her car seat. And, you know, recognizing now too that I have a much like me, very highly sensitive child who was, you know, she cried a lot basically. And that sound and that feeling of not being able to help her, which I don't think is unique to me, but it was like, so like just nails on a chalkboard and just couldn't believe that I couldn't get it together and figure it out. So yeah, it really just felt like I didn't have a place in getting help, you know, and not in the sense that there were no resources, but in like, I didn't recognize my story, mm-hmm. Because it looked pretty, I looked like I was not in a lot of stress or like, you know, this classic depression, like I was showering, I was going to work, I was seeing friends, I was, you know, doing all these things. But I had also not heard of like postpartum rage at that point either. Mm-hmm. I just thought I was a bad mom. And I remember, I don't even remember where the first time I heard it, but the physical reaction I had of like, yes, this is what this is. Uh-huh. And it's not a pathology and it's not, you know, something that's deeply wrong with me. It is the way I'm trying to express my needs. This is how my needs are coming out. And I am not getting what I need right now to be able to function the way that I want to.
This podcast is supported by Factor. If you want stress-free and ready-to-eat meals for you and your family, then Factor it is. These meals are fresh and crafted by chefs, and all of that means that in 2 minutes, you can be eating a quality meal that you can really taste because it's never been frozen. You just heat and serve. Yesterday for lunch, I had the honey mustard chicken with green beans and potatoes, and it was so full of flavor. And it was also just the right amount of food to keep me going for the day and feeling good with the amount of protein that I needed. And what's cool is I'm going out of town for a little bit, and it was really easy to put the delivery on pause and set it up for when I return. Head to factormeals.com/momandmind50 and use code momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code momandmind50 at factormeals.com/momandmind50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
When it comes to raising kids, there's so much to consider. Things like, what do we feed them? When do we feed them? How do they sleep? What does it look like to raise kind kids? How does their nervous system work? How do I keep myself calm? What are my triggers? There's so much that comes into play. And we are distilling all of that information for you at Voices of Your Village podcast, where we bring experts in the field of early childhood and education and psychology and across the board so that you don't have to comb the internet for information. You get to show up and hang out and have shame-free, judgment-free conversations and insights into what it looks like to raise kind, empathetic, emotionally intelligent humans. I'm Alyssa Blask Campbell. I have a master's degree in early childhood education. I'm a mom of two, and I am walking this journey right alongside you doing this work. Come hang out with me at Voices of Your Village, and we can dive into real conversations with actionable tips.
Yeah. So how far, can I ask how far into your experience into the postpartum were you experiencing that? And when you found out or figured out what was going on?
Yes. I would say the first probably 3 years. And I was seeing a therapist, and, you know, she was incredibly helpful. She was wonderful. But it was just such slow work of like getting me to believe that, you know, I was allowed to have self-compassion, mm-hmm. that a lot of my responses were based in old trauma and like and needing to have control and needing to check out for myself as a way of safety and starting to like put those pieces together. So I was very thankful to have that. And I think it finally clicked together in a way when my daughter was about 3 or 3.5. I would say that also coincided with the 2016 election, which just sort of snapped me to attention with a lot of things and made me feel like I needed more autonomy and I needed to be awake and alert, and for myself, for my daughter, for the world. You know, much too late, but here we are. So that did sort of feel like a catalyst to like, okay, you know, I've got to come back to myself here too, and not have my entire identity be what I can do for my child, and then feeling like just it's never enough, and being in that cycle. And then just feeling so burnt out and overwhelmed that all I could do is lay around and watch TV or be on screens. I wanted to come back and have more autonomy in my identity and my being.
Did along the way, and maybe looking back, but did anybody know that you were like suffering in the way that you were?
Well, I guess I don't think so. Suffering,
but yeah, could anybody tell?
Well, I think my husband, you know, definitely saw my, you know, outbursts, or, you know, would hear me like getting very frustrated. Mm-hmm. I think he didn't know where he fit into things, because part of my thing was like, I have to be the one to fix this. Like, I have to, you know, bedtime was like a 3-hour ordeal for like a really long time. And I would not give it up. It was like, I was certain I had done something to make this not work. Mm. I didn't know the magic, you know, sleep training or whatever protocol. And so I had to, it was like a dog with a bone. Like, I had to fix it. And he might kind of check in and I'd be like, get, you know, get out. Like, this is, I have to do this. It felt like the only way to prove, again, like I had to accomplish some sort of task in order to prove that I was a good mom. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think I was pretty,
that's intense. And it's exhausting to have that, that drive or need or whatever it felt like for you to have that much within your control is so exhausting. Mm-hmm. Did it, did you ever feel that exhaustion, or did it just like looking back on it again, did you feel tired or burnt out, or did it just like kind of fuel more of the ragey feelings?
Yeah, I think it was more just it. I definitely did not experience it as like a lethargy or like, oh, I can't get out of bed. It was more, it had that agitated edge to it of like, you know, got to keep pushing through. And I could see just by, you know, I mean, there was definitely that feeling of like, my days are not fun. Like, what is this? And I don't have like, you know, I can't read a book. I can't, like, all I can do is like watch Bravo at the end of the day, which I love Bravo. We're not knocking Bravo, but it didn't feel like I was really able to like have a hobby or like commit to anything else or really show up in my friendships the way I wanted to. And it was sort of like, when I get this mom thing figured out, then I can do that. And part of what my therapist helped me with was like, how about you start doing some of that now and just see what happens, like little by little, where can you do this and let go of some of the like, you know, hyper productivity and hyper independence and back off of some of that and start to like allow your nervous system to settle and actually feel your feelings and trust that you can be safe.
You're like,
them.
Wait a minute. No. Yeah. It's hard to allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. Especially if it's, whatever, for it shows up, obviously, you know, this very well, it's different for different people. Like, it can be scary or intimidating or vulnerable or like many different things. Yeah. Feeling your feelings is hard. And it's hard work. It's feelings. Feelings aren't like a weakness. It's actually, it takes a lot of strength to allow yourself to experience them.
Yes. And you have to slowly widen those edges of safety in order to be able to do that, because, you know, it's like a whole new way of being that you have to learn.
Yeah, for sure. So with this new, I guess, understanding of what you're experiencing, having a name for it, and having that relief that you described, how did things shift and change for you?
Yeah, it really helped to separate, you know, me as a person and me as a mother. Like, it depersonalized it. It's just me having feelings, like we all do. And this was just how mine were coming out. And so that was helpful in like taking the edge off and helping to get out of that guilt and shame cycle. So there wasn't then just like that rebound, like, you know, doing the same thing over again and then vacillating between the rage and regret cycle, and being able to use that compassion of like, I'm not acting like this because I'm a bad mom. I'm acting like this because I'm overwhelmed by this, 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 and this. And that common humanity, right? Like most people would be. People have different thresholds for what triggers them and upsets them, you know? And so here, this is where I'm at. I think it was also helpful too. And this is why also I bring up like this coinciding with the election, because then it started this whole understanding of really going more into, you know, like structural oppression and racism and sexism and things like that. And as I was learning about that, obviously, well, like obviously people can't see me right now, but I'm a white woman. And so I was obviously learning about my positioning in this. And then also understanding as a woman, you know, just how the patriarchy and things try to weaponize anger against women, weaponize caregiving against usually women, women of color. And so having that ability to zoom out too and sort of toggle between like my individual experience and see like, this is the water that we swim in. And it makes sense why I have internalized a lot of these things about what it means to be a good woman and a good mother and what that looks like. This gentle and quiet and never raises the voice and is always available, you know, and to be able to like realize, actually, there's a lot of stuff that we can be angry about. Mm-hmm. And the fact that our anger is seen as, you know, unmotherly or something is because they, you know, like the man, the systems, mm-hmm. don't want us to have it and be tapped into it, because then things would have to change. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, this whole process has sort of been like, okay, drop in what's happening for me. And then also, how do I see that in a larger context?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which has been helpful also in my work as a therapist. Obviously, you know, I'm a social worker. So we learned about like, you know, structural issues and person and environment and things like that. But the more you just sort of nuance it and understand like everything that your client is coming to you with, even if it does meet a DSM criteria or something, you know, it doesn't have to be deeply pathologized. And there's always information coming from their identity and how they've moved through the world and what's kept them safe and what's right. felt harmful to them. And so I use that a lot in working with motherhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so helpful to have a fuller perspective. I'm obviously, mm-hmm. I stopped myself because how can we ever have all of it? But,
right.
Yeah, it's so infuriating how, like you said, typically women are treated in the caregiving mm-hmm. space. And just the amount of pressure that comes with this role of motherhood is unreasonable, to say the very least. Mm-hmm. There's far too many expectations on one person mm-hmm. to be all and do all. I mean, the rage you were in part feeling was, I don't know, therapist to therapist. I'm like, was this like some part of internalization of those mm-hmm. systems? It like also with, mm-hmm. you know, all of the other things that you had experienced in your life, just that pressure to do and be mm-hmm. all is rage inducing.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that is rooted in, you know, like just my personal experiences of trauma too. Mm-hmm. Oh, this happened. It was my fault. Mm-hmm. You know, that when something feels inexplicable and too big and overwhelming, like, oh, I can make some sense of it by blaming myself and being angry and turning that rage inward. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Super fun too. it happens. So, I mean, I'm being, you know, sort of flippant about it, making a joke, but it happens so fast. Mm-hmm. Before you even know it, you feel bad mm-hmm. about something.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely.
Just, like you said, in the water.
Right.
So with now having that much bigger perspective, the mm-hmm. the macro, I guess, as well as your lived experience, how did that shift things for you in your healing?
Me personally?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It just feels less personal. Like there's so much more room for kindness and grace for myself, mm-hmm. and also for, you know, that just ability to analyze and the ability to push back against these sort of oppressive norms, right? In even to ask for help or to be in community and not in competition with other people, with other parents, and to defy perfectionism. One of my friends said she's working to be actively anti-perfectionist. Like, you can be like actively anti-racist or anti-sexist or something, instead of just not being imperfect. And so, yeah, it's just this ability to question, like, wait, and I'm feeling like this, why, you know, how much of this is an actual authentic experience and how much of it is someone else's voice in my head. And, you know, that just really helps clear a lot of the clutter, and kind of come back to what's actually happening for me and what I need.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. That's fantastic, because it really prevents you from going too deeply into, like, you being the problem, you meaning all of us, mm-hmm. but like you being the problem.
Right.
And putting yourself in context of mm-hmm. the system you're in and the world you're in and the mm-hmm. environment you're in and all of those things.
Yeah.
So once you have that perspective, how did you then start to roll that into the work that you do?
Mm-hmm. I mean, just that word context is everything. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, when I'm assessing somebody or we're just getting started, you know, we might talk about, like, especially if we're using insurance or something, you got to go through here is like the DSM diagnosis, here are the symptoms and blah, 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 all that. But I always say, like, this is low context, right? This is a checklist. Or if we do like the EPDFs or something like that, like, this is just one piece. And, you know, we also want to start by naming the fact that it is just traumatic to be a birthing parent or someone, you know, in a reproductive age, a mother, a birthing parent, and in this country right now, in a lot of the world, but I'm going to speak to, you know, what I know here. And we have to take that into account, because, you know, that helps us see, like, this is what we're working with. So it makes sense that we respond in these ways. Mm-hmm. And can we thank those ways for helping us, and for trying to keep us stable, trying to keep us safe, but also maybe understand if they, you know, need to be put away or something new needs to come to the front to help. Now moving out of these, like, trauma responses of, like, trying to be the perfect parent, trying to, you know, do everything for your kids and self-sacrifice. Those are trauma responses to a society that tells you you're not allowed to be fully human as a mother. So when we can kind of, I know this all sounds very intense, we don't just, like, spout this out at them.
No, you're good. Yeah.
This is, like, overtime. A PowerPoint presentation for a second.
Second appointment. What you're saying. It's you don't give this to the audience all at once. Yeah. Yes. Like, I think the audience can handle it.
Right. But I do actually, I name that villain mm-hmm. as the mommy complex. Mm-hmm. It's not you. You're like, you're struggling because you're within this, but it's not like you don't have something broken or, like, inherently wrong with you. You are responding to existing within the mommy complex, which is just a name for, like, how white supremacy and the patriarchy and capitalism and diet culture all, like, inform parenthood. So being able to say, like, that's the responsibility of that, and here's how you're responding to it. And what we want to look at is how you're responding and see if there's a way we can work to find something more helpful for you.
Mm-hmm. How do people respond to, like, giving it a name like that?
I mean, some people are like, okay, whatever, but it's not so much about the name, right? It's just, can I name what's happening? And so I think some people will be like, oh, yes, you know, like, mm-hmm. oh, that makes sense. Other people are like, I think it's actually just me, you know, mm-hmm. so it is, but even just being able to say it, to have someone hear it once, like, I think it does start to plant a seed, or it starts mm-hmm. to shift something. Mm-hmm. And I'll even say sometimes, like, I'm going to do that annoying thing where I'm like, I think this is actually, you know, just a symptom of, like, what messages have you heard about what it means to be a parent or mother? And again, just like that toggling in and out, mm-hmm. modeling that for them, I think does something for everybody, some more than others, but.
Yeah, for sure. And like very specifically, I mean, I can see what you're saying, that for people who might have a harder time seeing that it's not just them, that it could take a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. There, but I wonder just as we're talking about it, I'm wondering if, like, gosh, I bet that's really effective for anger.
Yeah, because there's someone you can be angry at. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be you. You don't have to be angry at yourself. And they're usually not angry at their children or their partner. I mean, it's like, you know, they might come out as like feeling anger about a situation, but it's not, you know, mothering that you hate. It's like the constructs of motherhood. Mm-hmm. And so it helps to direct it a little bit and pull it out of themselves. And that, again, just gives room for things to settle a little bit more, because that anger isn't just swirling all around inside them along with that shame and guilt. It's like, here's a place for it. Mm-hmm. Here's someone to target it at, you know, meaning these systemic messages and norms that we have.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of, yes, there's a lot of that emotional stuff that can be explained, like how and why we as mothers, let's say, feel and experience these things. How about for the, well, moms in this scenario, or it can be the primary caregivers even, mm-hmm. Receive care or are offered care mm-hmm. as it relates to, like, this bigger systemic stuff?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the big through lines for is the idea of sort of like self-sacrifice, or like having to fragment yourself. So, you know, this is not a new thing, but like my needs come last, and I shouldn't have any needs. And when I am in my parenting role, nothing else should exist. I should just be giving of myself here. And so, and then the idea that, in, you know, I'm talking a lot about mothers. And the reason being, not because, you know, mothers are the only caregivers, or because, you know, it's only mothers who are birthing parents, but it's just the sense of like, that is the expectation, that mothers are female and feminine, and that they, you know, then can be, you know, sort of exploited and their care is just like a natural thing that they love to give without end. And so those gender norms are really strong in, you know, who we think of as caregivers and who often gets defaulted as caregivers, and how we define motherhood too, or parenthood. And then I would say also like the perfectionism, and the feeling of, having to perform a role, and kind of always be on as a parent. There's not room to ask for help or to find care. And often I found that a lot of, and I know this is true for me, but a lot of my clients too, will, they don't even know what they want or need. Mm-hmm. They just don't. I don't know what I like anymore. I don't know. I can't even sit still to rest and think about this. And, right. So then that's like, well, this doesn't feel good, and I don't know what I want anyway. So I'm just going to keep doing the laundry or something like that. Right. Yeah. And just this feeling of like smallness, like you have to just be this one thing. Mm-hmm. And so another really important piece of like through line in my work is just, who are you as a person? Who were you before you became a parent? You know, like, let's start to access some of that and carry that through, because the things that are just brilliant about you just as a human being on this earth mm-hmm. are the things that are going to make you brilliant at your specific type of parenting that nobody else can do. It's mm-hmm. you. And so it's not about having to be perfect or perform a role or whatever. It's about finding those strengths within yourself and those values that are important to you and your personality and just bringing that forward. And then that helps also figure out, what do I need? You know, how do I care for myself? How do I make room for myself within this one part of my identity as a parent? And start to integrate it rather than being like, now I'm a mom. Now I'm at work. Now I'm with my friends. You know, mm-hmm. you're just you wherever you are. Right. So let's pull it all together.
Yeah, for sure.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Brie.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Brie, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down.
Or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
If you're a parent, I invite you to join us at the Mindful Mama podcast, where it's all about becoming a less irritable, more joyful parent. With sometimes hilarious and always thought-provoking experts and friends, at Mindful Mama, we know that you cannot give what you do not have. And when you have calm and peace within, then you can give it to your children. I'm Hunter Clark Fields, and I can't wait to see you there. Listen in to the Mindful Mama podcast.
And I do think in some ways that job or burden or whatnot is often on the person who is themselves struggling or at odds with themselves in mm-hmm. some way or having difficulty in this transition into this role. And it's really hard because not necessarily, like, people can't necessarily see anything from the outside,
right?
That, this person is struggling with their identity, who they are as a new parent, as a new mom. Mm-hmm. So, for the most part, it seems like there's not a lot of help being offered either.
Yes, I think it's an important what you're saying, like to distinguish between like we're looking to build your sense of identity. Not from a place of like, you must be fully self-actualized and like, but more from a place of listening and self-compassion and like really dropping in more to knowing yourself, which for, you know, many women or people of marginalized identities, it's like, you know, you often are told not to trust that and not to drop into that. And whatever you have is not enough and you should be looking for some other way to fix yourself. And so we can start very small, just like working with those self-compassion skills or checking in on your body. Like, do you need to pee? Are you right? Hungry? Like, yeah. Can you feel your feet? Like yeah. these very simple things, but they're not that simple when you've been disconnected from that your entire life. Mm-hmm. So dropping into that sense of identity, not as like an external achievement, but like an internal reconnection.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yeah. And it's so necessary because, right, for all of the reasons and all of the systems, there are a lot of ways in which either we were never allowed to be connected to ourselves in that mm-hmm. way, or it's been severed by mm-hmm. Any number of things that we've had to go through as people, where we had to cut parts of our identity out or turn them off in some way.
Right.
So in terms of the work that you've been doing, you're working a lot in the perinatal mental health space, mm-hmm. But you've also decided to offer a couple of other ways to help support families. Would you mind sharing that?
Yeah. So I have a private practice. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, and I licensed in Illinois and Louisiana. So that's sort of my daily, day-to-day work. But in sort of working through all the things that we've been discussing, I also wanted to do some different offerings too that maybe weren't necessarily therapy, although they're therapeutic in their own way. So I created a second business called The Matriarchy, and I do a couple different things there. One is running groups that really just center the, make space for the transition into motherhood. And I say transition in quotes because I've worked with people who, you know, their kids are like 10 years old, you know, but they just never had that moment of, oh, we can talk about what this is really like. So we do, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of being in community with each other, talking about the grieving that comes with becoming a new parent, and talking about using anger or other strong emotions to our benefit, allowing them to tell their stories, and talking about the mommy complex as well. But really just like giving that room. And then I just recently started also offering some business coaching. So working with mothers who are in like care-based businesses, so therapists, coaches, birth workers, et cetera, who want to start their own small businesses or like private practices. I think I'm one of those rare people who really liked the learning the business end of like building a private practice, and was like, this is cool. And I was like helping other people kind of informally do it. And I was like, well, let me turn this into something. So again, using their personality values, the things that they really stand for to carry through into these businesses, the same way, like I really care about helping, birthing parents and mothers and families and working in this space. And, you know, I want my actual business and practice to reflect that. Cause we need more really solid, progressive feminist businesses in this world. And we need more care in the world too.
Oh, right. For sure. Yeah, that's great, because it sounds like it. All of the principles that you've been talking about really carry through into all parts of how you're supporting other people, really checking in with who are you, and figuring that out, and how to expand on that if needed and wanted, and whether that's like through a business or internally and or within their own personal life. It's a fantastic perspective and way to support somebody be themselves in their life in more than just one way.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I had fun with it.
Good. Good.
It was also just helpful for me just to have the variety too of like, okay, I've got therapy and then I've got these other things. And it's nice to have different buckets to put in your work.
Yeah, for sure. And especially if you feel driven and motivated, and you know you can help somebody who needs that kind of help. That's a great feeling. So with your own experience and all that you've learned along the way and all that you're helping others with now, what's something that you want parents to know about becoming a parent in this day and age?
I think it would be that for as small as society and our culture tries to make us, like parenthood is a leadership practice, and it's an initiation into power. And, you know, we have the ability to wield that in a way that's really helpful and meaningful, and that allows you to show up in it and to be fully human in it. And, exactly as you are. And so there is a place for every parent, and there is something magical about every parent, and there are struggles that every parent has, and that's just the human experience. And I just want parents to remember that, you know, they are lovely just as they are.
Awesome. Perfect. Or not perfect. Just kidding. Yeah. No, I really appreciate that perspective. Thank you for that and for coming on and sharing all of this with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You can connect with Allison at highwiretherapy.com, welcometothematriarchy.com, or on Instagram at wearethematriarchy. For sure, please do share this episode far and wide. And as always, I thank you so much for being with us. Until next time.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Please share this podcast. Together we can support moms and families so that no one has to deal with this alone. Come connect with us at momandmind.com.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of their life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking